Good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock, and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on Monday, the 19th of September, the year 2011. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll talk to Ida Barnack, one of the organizers for next Saturday's Walk for the Poor. Katie Chapman and Marcia Bennett from NAMI will be here to highlight the upcoming family-to-family classes. We'll talk with Vinnie Latta about local activities surrounding Human Rights Week. And Sirlin Tabachnik from Aware will be here to talk about the nomination process for the annual Women of Distinction Dinner. We'll also hear the Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more today on a Juneau afternoon. Well, the forecast for tonight looks like rain with low temperatures around 47 degrees, southeast winds 15 to 25 miles per hour. Forecast for Tuesday, rain possibly heavy at times and high temperatures around 54 degrees.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Arctic Slope Native Association in Alaska is waiting to hear whether the U.S. Supreme Court will review a case involving underfunded contract payments between tribally ran medical facilities and the Indian Health Service. Lori Townsend reports.
The Federal Circuit Court says if the government doesn't have enough money to pay an entire contract amount, the affected contractor can't sue. The Tenth Circuit says the federal government must pay its bills in full. Attorney Lloyd Miller is handling the case for the Arctic Slope Native Association, or ASNA. He says the IHS never asks Congress for enough money to fully fund the contracts they award to tribes. For fiscal year 2012, IHS has contracted for $615 million, but is seeking $465 million in appropriations.
That's not right. They know it. They know what's going on in the president's budget, which is this part of the budget is prepared by the Indian Health Service. They tell Congress straight up in a very honest way, we know this is not enough. We know the total requirement is $615 million. We also know that we're not requesting $615 million. And then they ask for Congress's blessing to pay less.
The Chamber of Commerce of the United States and the National Defense Industrial Association have both filed briefs supporting ASNA's Supreme Court request seeking clarity. Miller says it's an indication of how worried government contractors are nationwide about what the decision could be because the Federal Circuit is the court that hears the majority of all government contract appeals. Secretary of Health and Human Services Kathleen Sebelius says historically IHS contract services have not been adequately funded.
And I think there's no question that the United States historically has never lived up to its treaty agreements. What has happened in this administration is a significant effort to close that gap. We're still not there.
But she says progress has been made, pointing to IHS funding increases each year since she's been secretary, even as other agencies have been cut. It will likely be October before Supreme Court justices announce whether they will review the case. I'm Lori Townsend in Anchorage.
There will be several provincial and territorial elections across Canada this year. One in particular has drawn the interest of Native groups, the vote in the Northwest Territories. And as Dan Karpinchuk reports, Aboriginal leaders are encouraging their people to become involved.
The Dene Nation in Canada's North wants its members to not only vote in the upcoming election, but to run as candidates. Chief Bill Erasmus says Dene leaders believe most of the Northwest Territories' power and money from resources should be going to Aboriginal groups. He has even said in the past that the government of the territories is not the government of the Dene.
We're encouraging people who are the same minds as our leadership, the same minds of our people, to come forward so that we have people that are there that can help represent our views.
Erasmus wants more Dene to become involved so they can oppose an agreement in principle signed between the territorial and federal governments in January. The deal proposes that the territorial government gains control of Crown lands and resources. Some First Nations are against that agreement, saying it doesn't give them a big enough share of the resource royalties. They also fear land claims and self-government talks could be put in jeopardy by the agreement. The majority of candidates in the election are Aboriginal, suggesting that the Dene are responding to their leadership's call to run for office. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
During this week in 1978, the Pascua Yaqui tribe of Arizona became federally recognized and the reservation was established. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. With funding by the Washington, D.C., Albuquerque, and Alaska law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Anderson, Miller, and Munson.
If you are a Native American who experienced discrimination from the USDA while trying to get a farm loan, you could get a payment of up to $50,000 or more. There will be meetings in locations around the country between July and December 2011 where you can get free legal help filing a claim. More details and a full schedule of meetings is available at IndianFarmClass.com or 1-888-233-5506.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our first guest is Ida Barnack from St. Vincent de Paul here to talk about the Walk for the Poor coming up this Saturday, September 24th. Ida, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
All right, thank you very much. Yes, we're having a Walk for the Friends of the Poor on Saturday, September 24th. The walk begins at 10. Registration begins at 9 o'clock, and the walk begins at the St. Paul's parking lot, and it goes up to the first stoplight, which is on Riverside Drive, and then cross the street on Riverside Drive and return to the St. Vincent de Paul parking lot. After the walk, we will have hot dogs available for a donation. The funds from the walk will be used to support our programs. We run a shelter on the St. Vincent de Paul property, and the shelter costs $250,000 a year to run, and about $70,500 of that must come from thrift store sales and donations. And it's very expensive to run this shelter, but this shelter is always full, and there is a waiting list. In fact, from January 1st to August 15th of this year, we had to turn away 35 households with children because we had no room for them. We also had to turn away many single adults. Also, we used the funds to support our various other programs. We give out $50 food vouchers to the needy, and last year we gave over $1,500 in food vouchers, and we gave over $410 holiday baskets. We also gave 65 families, which included 128 children, Christmas gifts. We gave out $66,000 in rental assistance and $1,400 in medical assistance, $4,463 in energy assistance, and about $4,000 in other assistance. So you can see that we need donations to support our programs. There are many people in Juneau who do need our help.
And you're raising money for the Walk for the Friends of the Poor this Saturday from 10 o'clock until about how long do you think it'll last?
Well, the walk is only 2 miles, so it's going to depend upon how fast you walk. So I would say it should take you no more than an hour to walk 2 miles.
And you can work up an appetite with hot dogs.
That's right. And we will have hot dogs and soda pop and coffee and tea.
Is a registration fee?
The donation is your registration fee.
And how much is that?
The donation is whatever you wish to give us. Any monetary donation you can give would be acceptable. And if you can't come to the walk, you can give a donation via our internet webpage. That's svdpjuno.org, or you can send it to St. Vincent de Paul at 8617 Teal Street in Juneau, or you can drop by the store and drop it in the store.
And October 31st is just around the corner, that being Halloween, and I know you have some always a variety of
items. Yes. Hopefully Saturday we will have a few Halloween items out this coming Saturday, September 24th.
All right, Ida Barnett, thank you very much for coming down to the station. Is there anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask. Is there a phone number people could call for more information?
Yes, you can call 321-0208.
All right, other than that, just show up at 9 o'clock to register for the 10 o'clock walk. It should take about an hour or two, the two-hour walk, two-mile
right.
walk.
Two-mile walk only, and that should only take about an hour.
All right, well, some people are faster walkers than others.
Yes, we are going to provide water, too, for the walk. So.
Sounds good. Well, Ida, thank you so much for coming down to the station today.
Thank you very much.
Like a herd of wild mosquitoes. That is the Seagull Schwal Band. Time is 3:13, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. Our next guests are Katie Chapman, who is the executive director of NAMI Juneau, and also Marcia Bennett, who is one of the instructors in NAMI's family-to-family classes, coming up with the next series of classes beginning October 3rd. Marcia and Katie, thank you very much for coming on the station today.
Thank you for having us.
So first, for people who aren't familiar, what is NAMI?
NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and we have a nonprofit NAMI Juneau chapter here in Juneau, and it's been in existence since the late
80s? 85.
Yeah.
Any idea what percentage of the nation's or Alaska's or even Juneau's populace needs NAMI services?
Well, NAMI provides support, education, and advocacy. We don't provide any direct services. So really, through support, advocacy, and education, we're helping out a huge number of people. But just to give you an idea of mental illness and the impact, about 60 million Americans experience mental health problems in any given year. Another statistic that we know is about one in every four people has a mental illness. So that gives you an idea of the scope of the problem. Did you want to add anything to that, Marcia?
Yeah, NAMI has been in Juneau for a long time, and the first thing that we sponsored was JAMI, which is the direct service counseling service for adults in Juneau, and then later on we helped form Polaris House for homeless mentally ill people, and they've been both of those programs have spun off, and now we're in the schools trying to educate high school students about mental illness and help them if they have one, and also just do some stigma busting. And we've been teaching the family to family class now for about 7 years here, twice a year, once in the spring and once in the fall.
Could you describe the series of classes, please?
Sure. Family to family is a curriculum that was developed by Joyce Berland, who's a PhD psychologist, and it's a fairly comprehensive program that's been taught all over the country. About 200,000 people in the states have taken the class already, and it helps families of mentally ill people to come to grips with what it means to have someone with a mental illness in their family, and that includes brain injuries and other you know, some are inherited. There's the field has developed quite a bit. There's a lot more medications available. There's a lot more recovery available, and a lot of times people are afraid to talk about it and share it in a class setting. The class is a way of sharing this information and being empowered and helping to advocate for the person that that is your relative.
I guess could you be more specific about how the classes are structured?
Sure. First class starts out as kind of an introduction. The second class is specifically deals with the different mental illnesses: schizophrenia, bipolar, anxiety disorder.
Depression. So there's definitely an education component that talks about what the illnesses are, and then the part of the class, too, is really teaching family members and caregivers how to take care of themselves.
Right. And there's a major component that talks about the brain and as, you know, full of the latest information about that. There's been a tremendous growth of knowledge about the brain in the last 10, 15 years, and that's really revolutionized mental health care in the country and has helped a lot of people to lead very normal lives, even though they have a serious mental illness. And sometimes people aren't aware of that, and that knowledge has grown and become more accepted that a mental illness is oftentimes as manageable as diabetes or a heart condition or any other medical condition.
And what goes on in later classes?
Oh, later we spend quite a bit of time talking about ways to, you know, to use the tools that we're providing to, you know, to help each other and to help yourself to do the best possible way, you know, job that you can with the person that you're taking care of or responsible for, and where the resources are, who are the counselors, what kind of medications there are, and what are some of the pros and cons of those medications, and just generally kind of moving through a whole field of mental health that the legal side of it, you know, the HIPAA regulations that allow people to decide for themselves whether to take a medication or not, and some of the problems that causes for family members, and there are quite a few books that we bought that we'll be sharing with the class. The last couple of classes talk more about advocacy, and then there's a certificate that everyone gets at the end of the class, and there's a party at the last class.
So it seems like the classes are geared to the needs of the people that come there.
Right. Right. And people can come alone, or they can come with a spouse or a child. It's not limited to one person per family. If you want to share it together, that's fine. And the way that we handle it is go to NAMI at gmail.com, N-A-M-I, or call Katie at...
The number at NAMI is 463-4251. So you can call to register.
Right. And we encourage everyone to register because there's limited space. And the classes at the Juno Birth Center above Search and Bartlett Hospital, and it starts at 5:30 on Monday the 3rd of October and goes till Monday the 12th of December. So it's 11 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Who are some of the teachers involved?
Myself, I'm one of the teachers, and the other teacher is Michelle Thompson. She's a local teacher here, and we're both volunteers.
What are some of the issues that families in Juneau are confronted with?
Well, there are the mental illnesses. I think a lot of times in Juneau, they manifest themselves in alcoholism or drug addiction first. A lot of young people first discover that they have a mental illness in their early teens or late teens, early 20s, and that seems to be one of the more common problems right now is with the new medications, people are realizing that someone who's drinking heavily or using drugs heavily probably has a mental illness that needs to be treated.
How in general does Juno treat NAMI clients?
Pardon me?
How in general does Juno treat NAMI clients, or not clients, but the mentally ill in particular?
Well, I think with the school programs and national recognition that mental illness is a medical illness, I think it's improved quite a bit, and also people are realizing too that these illnesses are treatable and recovery is very possible. So I think a few years ago it would have been a tougher go, but I think we're making a lot of progress.
How could we do better?
Well,
I think just more education about mental illness would make it better. I mean, there's still a stigma attached to mental illness, and this is sort of associated with bullying in the schools among our youth. So definitely, I think more education to better understand mental illness.
Well, and we probably need more funds for housing and services because nationally there's quite a problem with jails filling up with people who are mentally ill instead of being treated they're housed in jail, and apparently in Alaska that's very common as well.
I understand the first week in October is going to be dedicated as Mental Health Awareness Week.
It is. We are having a few activities going on throughout the week of October 3rd through the 8th, starting with October 3rd, Monday, our family-to-family class starting. And then we're going to have our annual membership meeting on Thursday the 6th at St. Paul's Parish Hall. And it starts at 6 p.m. It's open to anyone who is a member or interested in becoming a member. We'll have some food and our guest speaker, Tom Chard, from the Alaska Mental Health Board. And then on Saturday, we're having, in partnership with SAIL, we're having a walk, I think, run, walk, or roll. So it's an event where you could walk or you could run or you could roll, I guess. But it starts at Twin Lakes at 9 a.m., and the trail is past all those service providers up there, like SAIL and the Family Birth Center and Search and JAMI. And every time you pass one of those providers, somebody will be standing out front handing out a card, a playing card, from a deck of cards. And at the end, you present your hand, and if you've got whoever has the best poker hand wins. There'll be some prizes. So it's a $15 registration fee for adults, $10 for students and seniors, and $1 for children. But if you register early, you can save $5. It would be $10 for everything. And you can register by calling SALE or NAMI or at both JRCs and also at the Nugget Outfitter.
I've been talking to Marcia Bennett and Katie Chapman from NAMI about the Family to Family classes and also Mental Health Awareness Week, which is the first week in October. Anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No, just that we would love to see you at our annual membership meeting. We need volunteers, and that's it.
Yeah. Phone numbers?
Yeah, and the phone number again.
Oh, the phone number for NAMI is 463-4251.
Website?
Website is NAMI Juno, spelled NAMI, Juno at gmail.com.
All right, well, thank you very much for coming down to the station.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Jeff.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 19th of September, 2011. It was on this day, 1982, a computer scientist at Carnegie Mellon, Scott Fallman, suggested in an online bulletin board that if your post was intended as a joke, you should type a colon, a hyphen, and a closing parenthesis, which, when you look at it sideways, looks like a smiley face. A colon, a hyphen, and a closing parenthesis. It was the first ever emoticon, a word that comes from emotion and icon. The smiley face, followed by a frowning face, and many others. It was on this day, 1778, 4 years after the first meeting of the Continental Congress, a year after the signing of the Declaration of Independence, a year before the drafting of the Constitution, the Congress's Committee on Finance presented the first national budget. 1796, on this day, President George Washington issued his farewell address. It was published in newspapers around the country, in which he urged his fellow Americans to relinquish personal or geographical interests for the good of the country, and he warned that a system of political parties would reduce the nation to infighting. It was on this day, 1995, the Washington Post, the New York Times, jointly published a 35,000-word essay, Industrial Society and Its Future. It was the manifesto of the Unabomber, a serial male bomber who had promised to renounce terrorism if they published his writing. The newspapers were criticized for publishing it, criticized for capitulating to a criminal, but the FBI had encouraged it. They knew that the Unabomber was a single white male. They hoped that distributing his writing would help catch him, and it did. A social worker named David Kaczynski read the manifesto and recognized similarities between it and letters he'd gotten from his brother, Ted. He tipped the FBI off, and they found the Unabomber in a remote cabin out west. And it's the birthday of Roger Angel, born New York City, 1920, an editor at the New Yorker magazine since 1956, also famous for his writing about baseball, an editor of John Updike, Woody Allen, and many other writers. His most recent book, Let Me Finish, personal essays on growing up in New York and his service in World War II, and of course his career at the New Yorker. Here's a poem for today by Matt Cook, entitled Nonsense. His grandmother, for example, was pathologically no-nonsense. He was aware then that his nonsense was built on the backs of a lot of other people's no-nonsense. He would have apologized to everyone for his nonsense, but he understood how little sense it made to apologize for nonsense. It was difficult enough for him to drive a motor vehicle. Driving was a function where nonsense was not permitted. When the traffic light turns green, you absolutely must go, whether or not it is the truly beautiful thing to do. He was the first generation in his family to have a problem with this. poem by Matt Cook, Nonsense, from his collection Eavesdrop Soup, published by Manic D Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by LendingTree, providing up to 4 loan offers from a network of lenders. Learn more at LendingTree.com or 1-800-555-8733. And by Constant Contact, combining the power of email marketing and social media for more customers and more time back on your clock. ConstantContact.com. Produced by Kathy Roach and written by Heather McPherson. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Broadcast support comes from McDonald's, now serving caramel apple sundaes and parfaits. McDonald's is open daily in the valley on Trout Street.
Time is 3:30, and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guest is Steve Wolf from the Juneau Human Rights Commission, here to talk about Juneau Consor, the activities available on Human Rights Week. Steve, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Well, I'm very pleased to have this opportunity to get out over the airwaves.
First, tell us what the Human Rights Commission is all about.
Well, the Human Rights Commission is a group of people appointed by the Borough Assembly to look into issues of human rights. We're charged with providing educational campaigns, and that's what we're trying to do at this point, is raise people's awareness about some of the issues of human rights here in town. There's been a long history of differences between some various cultures in our town, and we want to try to change that.
What are some of the issues you're talking about?
Well, issues of discrimination between, for instance, Native groups or Filipinos, or and in the larger society here, and lack of understanding about differences. We want to raise people's understanding and awareness of cultural differences and how important they are and what impact they have. Certainly our schools are making an attempt to address this kind of issue, and certainly there are issues of bullying, for instance, in the schools, and not only in the schools, but as people get older, those kinds of things get more subtle, but they still exist.
What kind of activities have you sponsored in the past few years?
Well, in the past few years, we've had a series of events called I Am Juno, which we hope to continue on next year and hopefully beyond that. It's 4 events. There's a dance event, and then food and storytelling, and we schedule those once a month during the summer months and compete with the other larger venues that various people try to organize. But it's been real interesting, and the turnout has been real worthwhile. What we're organizing now on this Juno Can Soar is a series of 4 events beginning tomorrow night, September 20th at 6:30. It's a video called The Canary Effect. I haven't seen this video yet, so it'll be new to me, but it'll be at the Egan Classroom, Room 112 at UAS. It's a presentation of the historical context of Alaska Natives and American Indians, and there'll be a discussion afterwards, and we hope we'll get a good attendance for that. Then on Wednesday, September 21st, again at 6:30 p.m., Ernestine Hayes will be giving us discussion of the Bluebird Effect, Juneau's historical context, and that'll be in Egan Classroom 108 at UAS. It's about what Juneau Natives faced just 40 years ago or 20 years ago or just recently, how that manifests itself today. So it'll be an update on some of the differences and similarities between issues that existed years ago. Then on Saturday at 5:30, we'll have a Native Foods reception, and that's in Egan Classroom 221 and 222 and the campus. Traditional Native foods coming from the sea and nearby lands will be presented and provided for sampling. So we urge folks to come out for an understanding of various food traditions to help us understand the people that lived here long before any of us white folks came. Then follow that will be a speech by Byron Malott, 50 Years Involved, A Native Perspective, and that'll be in the Egan Library. And these are jointly sponsored by UAS, in which we greatly appreciate their participation in. You can see around town we have various places for posters, and the title of it is Juno Can Soar. But the events start at 6:30 on tomorrow night and Wednesday, and 5:30 at Saturday. So we hope folks will take some time to come out, and with the weather being what it is, outside of, there won't be a whole lot of competition for outside events, so we're looking forward to a good turnout.
If people need more information, is there a phone number people can call?
Yes, you can call 209-3952 or email junohumanrights@gmail.com, and we'll be glad to provide any more information for you.
In case people didn't have their pencils out, could you recap the events real quick? And they're all free and open to the public?
Yeah, these are free and open to the public. I'm glad you mentioned that. The Tuesday at 6:30 at UAS on the Egan Library, room 112. Wednesday, the September 21st, also at 6:30 p.m. That's in room 108 at UAS. Then Saturday on the 24th at 5:30 p.m. will be the Native Foods, followed at 7 o'clock in the Egan Library with Byron Millott. So we hope folks will show up.
And Steve Wolf, thank you very much for coming by the station today.
Well, thank you for having us.
This is Bird Note. A light September breeze wafts across a coastal estuary. A flock of common terns wings over the water, their harsh voices a sharp contrast to their sprightly appearance. One plunges headfirst into the water, then bounces aloft, grasping a small fish in its bill. But before the tern can swallow its catch, a dark bird with a sharply pointed tail swoops in. The tern twists and turns in frantic flight, trying to evade its larger adversary. Back and forth they race, the dark, falcon-like bird gaining until it nips the tern's wing with its hooked bill. The hapless tern drops its hard-won fish, which the pursuer catches mid-air, engulfing its pirated meal. This elegant buccaneer is a parasitic Jaeger, a relative of gulls that is built for sprinting speed and predatory feats. Jaeger is German for hunter, and on its Arctic tundra nesting grounds, the Jaeger hunts small birds and rodents. The rest of the year, the parasitic Jaeger spends on marine waters, living up to the first half of its name. In the late summer and fall, watch for Jaegers over inland waters, from Puget Sound to the Great Lakes to the Chesapeake Bay, especially around flocks of terns and small gulls. Or see a video of one on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
Close. dark. Hold your breath to still your heart with the will of its own. Loves her more than she ever could know. When she comes home and opens yours, deeper and wider than ever before. Close your eyes and face the dark.
Singer-songwriter Tracy Springs should be performing in concert on Friday, September 30th at the Rookery at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are available at the door. In the studio with us now is Sarah-Lynn Tabachnik from AWARE, here to talk about Women of Distinction nominations, which are due Monday, September 26th. Sarah-Lynn, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
I'd like to do this every time a group comes on. Kind of tell me about the organization itself, AWARE.
Sure. AWARE actually was formed in 1977. And the goal of AWARE is to provide services for people who have been met with domestic violence, sexual assault, issues of interpersonal violence, and initially trying to provide immediate safety and crisis intervention. And the recognition that this was happening, women were being raped and they had no place to go. When women called the crisis line, they were often calling about domestic violence, and from that AWARE grew and grew and grew, from initially people, volunteers, having women come into their own homes, and now we have, of course, a 32-bed shelter providing in-house services as well as community-based services as well as an array of prevention services.
And you couldn't have done this without the help of a lot of women of distinction.
That's so true. It's really true. We've had Women of Distinction, this event, since 1997, so when AWARE was 20 years old, and we've honored several women who've had significant impacts on AWARE directly and many women who've had impacts on AWARE, not quite as directly, but very much so, and all the women who've had impacts on women and children in our community in really outstanding and beautiful ways.
What does someone have to do to be nominated?
You know, to be nominated is kind of easy because you don't have to do much except be yourself and live your life and be noticed by someone who wants to nominate you. You can be nominated by a friend, a family member, someone who knows you very well, or someone who doesn't know you very well. Sometimes we've had women nominated by two separate individuals, and it's really quite a fun process.
So you can nominate someone without their being aware of it.
That's true. And then they're surprised.
What have some of the past honorees been?
Oh, the best honorees?
Not the best ones, the past ones.
The past ones. Oh, that's good.
Because they're all good.
That's true. They're all really good. And every year it's a wonderful event. Well, last year in 2011, people may remember that we honored Debbie Ballum, Susan Cox, Selena Everson, and Diana Stevens. That was a wonderful year and a wonderful cadre of women. Also recently, we've honored in 2010 Chris Ashenbrenner, Carolyn Brown, Bev Ingram, Helen Sarabia, 2009 Marla Berg, Ann Bucheever, Marsha Buck, and Angie Lunda. And it's nice to say some names. Thanks for asking me, Jeff, because I imagine that some are names that people recognize, and others people don't recognize, which is also part of the fun of the event. Some women are known more in the community, and some women are known less in the community. They're more unsung heroes, and it's really kind of beautiful to blend honoring people who are or have been recognized, as well as women who maybe are more in the background with what they're doing.
Do the nomination forms have to be like very verbose and several pages long, or can they just be a sentence or two?
Probably more than a sentence or two, so that we can get really a good feeling of who these women are and why they deserve this honor. The board of directors meets and looks at the nomination forms, which can be a grueling process when you've got wonderful nominees to consider, and looking at the answers that people provide on the nomination forms. The forms can be accessed on our website, which is awareak.org, or we can be emailed at info@awareak.org, or someone can just call us at 586-6623, and we'll send them a nomination form.
What are some of the questions that you ask?
We ask questions like, how does this woman serve as a role model for others? How does she share her skills and knowledge? How does she represent and or support diverse groups within our community? How does she make a positive difference in the lives of women and children? How does she demonstrate qualities of integrity, commitment, and leadership? So things to be a little bit thoughtful about, and often which people can answer pretty easily when they think about women they admire and respect in Juneau.
And when are the nominations due?
They are due in 1 week. That would be next Monday, September 26th.
And how do they send them, just by email or by postal?
Right. Email, post, fax, whatever works best for women. And this will be our 16th annual Women of Distinction Dinner and Silent Auction.
And when is that scheduled for?
That will be March 3rd, 2012. And thanks for asking, because traditionally we've held this event on the second Saturday in March. And a few years ago, when I went to reserve Centennial Hall for the second Saturday in March, it was taken. That's where we hold Women of Distinction. And so this year in 2012, we're going to be on the first Saturday in March. So all you listeners out there, save the date, March 3rd.
And it always seems to be a sellout crowd, so get your tickets early.
Yes.
And how do you get your tickets?
You get them through Aware. And my hunch is that once we have the women chosen who will be honored, I might speak with you again, Jeff, and talk about who the honorees are, and we'll be having tickets generally towards the end of the year. They're available for sale.
And usually we have the women on honorees on live on the radio talk about why they were honored and how they can be providing
right.
inspiration to other women and
yeah.
people in general.
That's always fun. It's right. fun for me because, of course, I read about them on paper, as does the Aware Board of Directors, who makes the selection. And then to hear them speak in their own words, or, you know, answering your questions, is really fun.
It must be good for the nominees and the honorees themselves to be selected and kind of validates the work they do.
I think so. I think it's a beautiful feeling, and it's a beautiful celebration for the community, too, you know, to recognize the good things that are happening and what's going right in our community.
Sarah Lynn Tabachnik, thank you for going by and talking about the Women of Distinction nominations. They are due Monday, September 26th, and how can people get the forms?
They can call Aware at 586-6623. They can also use that number if they would like some information or support regarding domestic violence or sexual assault.
Anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
I think you got everything, Jeff. Thank you.
Everybody needs someone to show them what is possible. Everybody needs someone to go as far as she can see. I need to stand upon the shoulders of giants. I need a woman who's as big as me. When I was a little bitty baby sitting on my mama's knee, I looked around to see just what the future had in store for me. I needed to see women who were living without limits. I needed to see women making history. So I said, give me a woman who can climb the tallest mountain. Give me a woman who can swim across the widest sea. Women need women who lead lives of boldest daring. Tell me their stories, they inspire me. Give me Amelia, who went soaring across the ocean. Winnie Mandela, who is gonna set her people free. Judy Chicago, who breaks all artistic silences. These women leave a precious legacy. When I was a young teenager, reading my 17, I looked around to see just what the future had in store for me. Women in the fashion mags were too small for my dream. I needed to see women just as big as me. So I said, give me a woman who can climb the tallest mountain. Give me a woman who can swim across the widest sea. Women need women who lead lives of boldest daring. Tell me their stories, they inspire me. I know of women all across the nation, leading lives of courage in the face of fear and poverty. One lives in an abusive home, one raises her 5 children. Women, we need a new mythology. Now that I'm a grown-up woman living in society, I still look around to see just what the future holds for me. I still need women who are shooting like a comet, so I can leave my own starlight in this galaxy. And I say, give me a woman who can climb the tallest mountain. Give me a woman who can swim across the widest sea. Women need women who lead lives of boldest daring. Tell me their stories, they inspire me. Won't you sing? Tell me their stories, they inspire me. I'd like to tell you their stories, they inspire me. Won't you sing? Tell me their stories, they inspire me. Won't you please tell me your story, you inspire me. I'd like to tell you their stories, they inspire me. Won't you please tell me those stories, they inspire me. I'd like to hear your story, you inspire me.
I've been having trouble sleeping, 'cause I'm restless and I fret. So last night I drank some special herbal tea. It relaxed me so at bedtime, I sank in slumber so sublime. Somehow the darndest notion come to me. I dreamed Count Basie was a cowboy. I dreamed he had a cowboy band. That old piano pounder was a rancher and a rounder. Striding and swinging was the Basie brand. I dreamed Count Basie was a cowboy. Whoa, you should have heard his outfit blow. They were long on horns and chops and chaps, and the boss wore Stetsons now instead of caps. A wee bit strange on the range perhaps, when I dreamed Count Basie was a cowboy. I dreamed it was April in Paris. Here comes Mr. 5x5. Sonny and Freddie, Walter and Teddy, 16 men swinging that jive. Doggies jumping at the woodside. There's Harry and Eddie and Joe. Frank and Buck are roping tickle toe. Lester leaps in and he steals the show. They brand him on the rump with a 1 o'clock jump. When I dreamed Count Basie was a cowboy. horse, of course, was Lil Darlin'. And she's eating hay from every tub. Nothing seemed phony about that cute little pony, swinging on all fours and munching her grub. I dreamed Count Basie was a cowboy. Whoa, you should have heard his outfit blow. After supper in the bunkhouse, they'd strike up the band, and each and every cowpoke was a dang top hand. Solid as a rock, you must understand. When I dreamed Count Basie was a cowboy.
The music of Don Burnham.
Tonight on 360 North, at 6 p.m., watch the BBC World News Early Edition, then Newsline from NHK Japan at 6:30. At 7 p.m., get an update from the BBC World News Late Edition and Alaska Weather at 7:30. Is Alaska's oil age ending? That's on Science for Alaska at 8, followed at 9:30 by the Wizard's Laboratory, Edison's Quest for Rubber. It's a great way to look at science. Tonight on 360 North.
This is the David Way Jazz Orchestra. You are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Auk Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT Surfshuna at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable, Juneau on Digital Channel 871. We're live online at www.ktoo.org. Coming up tomorrow on a Juneau afternoon, we'll find out about this October's Great Pumpkin Festival with our guest Brenda Krause. Get the details about Rainforest Yoga's fundraiser Bamboo Asana, and UAS Professor Alex Switcher will be here to highlight the upcoming Native film series. That writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music, and more tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon. Strong wind warning this evening through late tonight. Forecast for tonight, also rain heavy at times, with low temperatures around 48 degrees. Forecast for Tuesday, more rain heavy at times. And forecast for Wednesday, pretty much throughout the rest of the week, looks like rain is likely. Coming up next is All Things Considered. Thank you very much for tuning in to Juneau Afternoon today, and have a pleasant evening, rain and all. Those of you braving the weather, the emergency vehicle access road, commonly referred to as the airport dike trail, is closed to vehicle and pedestrian traffic until tomorrow afternoon at 5 o'clock. Work associated with the runway safety area improvements will occur during this closure.